Hello and welcome back to the Stop Stressing Me Out podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Smith, and I'm welcoming you back after our week-long hiatus. I had the best of intentions to get an episode out last week and then had my kids home on spring break and then just realized that was overly ambitious. So they're back in school. We're back at, getting things going and here we are. I am really excited about this week's guest. This week's guest is actually a former colleague of mine. So today we're going to be joined by Ryan Adams from Benevity. He is the head of strategic partnerships. And as part of the strategy and growth team at Benevity, Ryan drives cross-sector collaboration, innovative partnership strategies, and sustainable social and business impact. I think I even say it in the podcast episode itself, but I always thought when I was at Benevity that he had the coolest job there. Like, he got to work on the most exciting projects with the coolest organizations out there, got to understand as part of the social impact labs the trends and the data and the evidence of corporate purpose programs, which to me was always super exciting. So prior to this role, Ryan was on Benevity's Impact Labs team, which we talk a little bit about. It's a social innovation hub that produces cutting-edge data, research, insights, and best practices. Before Benevity, however, Ryan held titles as both the Director of Strategic Partnerships and Director of Corporate Citizenship at Royal Bank of Canada. Previous employers included McKinsey and Company's Social Sector Office, the Clinton Foundation, and WE, Free the Children. Ryan also sits on the Canadian board of Lua Wildlife Conservancy and is an unapologetically passionate vegan. Now, some of you listening might be like, hey, we're talking about volunteerism again, and we're talking about wellness. Why am I banging this drum so hard? Here's how today's episode is going to be a little bit different. We've talked employee resource groups and the benefits of volunteerism within that. We've talked recently with Jerome Tenniel about volunteerism and how to have more impact in your volunteer engagement program. And today we're actually just diving deep, deep, deep into the evidence behind it. So one of the things I really geeked out on, and I'm sure you'll hear in this episode today, in my time at Benevity was the data and the trends and the best practices from hundreds of clients. So for those of you who are like, wait a second, what is Benevity? I've never heard of this before. Victoria, you're diving too quickly into it. Benevity is an organization, a software as a service company, SaaS, for those of you who don't know what that means. And it's basically a tool where individuals at an organization can go in and log volunteer hours and track volunteer time, participate in volunteer opportunities, and also get like matching rewards for donations. So a disaster happens, you go in and make a donation and your employer maybe matches it 100%. I think at this point, Benevity has over 1,000 clients around the world who use their software to varying different degrees. And I worked for them for almost 3 years and with some of the most exciting brands in the world. And it was a really great experience to see how these types of programs, I used to run one of these types of programs when I worked with Chevron Canada on a much smaller scale. We're talking at that time an organization of 1,000 people in Canada, and I've had the opportunity to work with brands with over 1 million employees on their programs. So it was really exciting at Benevity understanding and seeing the data on these programs. And I am a huge believer in what an intentional program like this can do for an organization as a whole, for teams, for departments, but also right down to the individual level, what they can do for your level of purpose in the workplace and how that actually ties into stress. So while we're not necessarily going to be talking about stress data today, we're going to be talking about all the other different data points, including retention and turnover and all of that, and how that ties into volunteerism and corporate purpose program, and how that ties back to you in your workplace and what you can do or what you can leverage if it's already being done or not. So I hope you geek out on it in the way that I do. Ryan makes this a super accessible conversation. So some of the things that we chat about, we talk about how to turn these implicit understandings we have about volunteerism and doing goodness into explicit findings. These will be super helpful for you if you are trying to advocate for this on your own team or in your own organization. Like, the data exists, use it. We talk about the push and the pull between high participation rates and quality, the quality of volunteerism. So that's an interesting little debate that we have. We talk about the fine line between what does it mean for an organization to be courageous and cautious in their social impact program, and how truly difficult this is to walk that line. We talk about the individual search for purpose in the workplace and how that ties to stress. The tie between psychological safety and acts of kindness in volunteer programs, and why hard economic times are actually not at all the time to pull back on corporate purpose programs, among many things. Honestly, what this conversation truly made me realize is how much I wish I knew Ryan better when I worked at Benevity. I feel like we could have geeked out so much better together when I was there, but I am just truly grateful for the time that I got to spend with him, and I think you will enjoy this episode as much as I did. So thank you so much for tuning in. And don't hesitate to check out the show notes wherever you're listening to this podcast today for any of the links and everything that we're discussing today. So without further ado, let's head into the episode. Well, thank you so much, Ryan, for joining me on the podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with the question we ask all of our guests, which is, what is stressing you out today? The small, the big, whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Oh, I feel like, Victoria, I'm the worst person to ask this question because I am a very low stress individual. My wife makes fun of me for being so low stress, but I've got two things that are stressing me out. One, relatively stressing me out. One is personal and one is work related. On the personal front, my 7-month-old daughter is still sleeping or not sleeping at all through the night. And so that is definitely taking a toll on us. And on the work front, honestly, it's the unsexy stuff. Like, the administrative stuff is catching up to me. We're coming up to year end. I'm thinking about the expense reports I haven't done, the performance reviews I need to do for myself and for others. It's like the administrative stuff as we sprint towards Benevity's year end and trying to get all those exciting things across the line. It's like the administrative stuff that is weighing on me of all the things I have to do.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, like, you're a generally low stress person. That makes me very happy. But it's also like, we ask this question to normalize all the things that we've all got going on, right? I think it's so easy for us to feel like we're in our little stress ball silos, and, you know, let's normalize what we've all got going on.
I completely agree. I think my default is to overshare and over communicate on things. So as a result of that, maybe I process my stress that way. But yeah, gotta talk about these things.
Exactly. Well, so maybe to ground the conversation a little bit, could you maybe share, like, the high level, like, what your career journey has looked like and how it's led you to Benevity and partnerships and Impact Labs and all of that good stuff?
Yeah, you know, I won't give you the long sort of resume answer, but I think at the core of it is I have, I guess, since I was like 19 years old, being obsessed with this notion of doing well and doing good. And so that's led me to a career in, like, the very broadest sense of the word, of social impact or being in the social sector. I've had the chance to do that at sort of big prestigious consulting firms, at global nonprofits, working for a former president, obviously being in the corporate sector, and now working at a tech platform. But it's all being centered around this idea of, like, driving greater social value and trying to leave the world a little bit better than you found it. And so that's really always been at the core for me. It's been my North Star. And I've been pretty deliberate in wanting to have different experiences across different parts of the sector, right? Working at a nonprofit, working at a big company, working at a startup, to really understand the way each of those groups tackle some of these problems, so I could have, like, a more holistic understanding of that. And so I think I've very much viewed that first phase of my career, that first 10 to 15 or whatever years, as being that, like, discovery. Let's learn what's going on in the sector from the vantage point of a number of different stakeholders. And then hopefully this, like, second part of my journey for the next 10 to 15 years is really all about honing in on things that I care about the most to have as much impact as possible.
I love that, and I can relate to it so well, having, done a corporate purpose program at, Chevron Canada, and then been in nonprofit, and then been at Benevity. So it's I love that breadth in the same sector. It's a great experience to have, I think.
Yeah, like I'm speaking to the choir, I think,
Yeah.
but there's so much work to be done, right? And it's exciting and it's innovative and it's where capital and resources and energy is being focused right now. And so like why wouldn't someone want to have a career in this space? If you can pay the bills and pay off your mortgage and have a nice life and make a pretty profound impact on the world and play your own role, like why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah. Well, and in our time at Benevity, when we overlapped, I always thought you had one of the coolest jobs there in working in those, those big, exciting partnerships, as well as with Social Impact Labs. So for anyone that maybe for anyone that doesn't know, could you give us an overview of what Social Impact Labs does?
Yeah, our Impact Labs was set up really to be a social incubator for Benevity, right? Thinking about the strategic side of it as we grow as a tech company and expand and become a truly global organization. How do we ensure that purpose and impact stays at the core of what we do? And that manifests itself in research and thought leadership and advising our clients and being a good partner in the broader space and learning and sharing our learnings. So it really is like a notion of that social incubator. We're testing a lot of ideas. We're bringing ideas to market. We're normalizing some of those in the spaces in which we operate. And then we're trying to learn on the fly. And so it was a really great spot for me to really join Benevity. I like to come in and break stuff. And so it was a perfect spot for me, and I had the chance to really focusing on some programmatic pieces, but on the notion of partnerships specifically, which I honestly find really humbling.
Well, it's interesting. I find the data is just so fascinating. And when I worked at Benevity and worked with clients, like that was the thing they wanted more than anything. What is everybody else doing? Because so often the individuals that run these corporate social purpose programs at their organizations are a team of one or two or three, and having been that person, you kind of don't know what's going on unless you're, just looking at the CSR reports that are out there. So, like, having this data and this, incredible North Star is not the right term, but like this, vision of what's possible, where people are at, and where we can go, super helpful. But maybe before we get into like the nitty-gritty of the data, as the series is all about workplace well-being, I'm biased and I have a, huge belief that these programs contribute to well-being. But how do you think of these programs in how they contribute to employee well-being?
Yeah, it's a great starting question, and I think I'm going to link back to what you talked about with data. I think anyone who has been in this space or operates in this space, like directly or indirectly, or frankly is just like volunteered before, there is that implicit understanding of the impact that has on you as an individual, right? From a state of happiness, of reducing stress, of how it helps you develop new skills, how you can build culture and community with your peers and the folks you're volunteering with, that sense of being in a broader community and feeling connected to that. Like those are all implicit things that everyone for years who has been doing this work has known. I think the really exciting part now is there's so much research and there's so much data, to your point, that turns that implicit understanding and feeling into something that we can like quantify and make explicit. We can finally connect the dots, and by no means just Benefi, right? There's so much work being done in this space to really uncover the full impact of what those volunteer programs are on the individual, on the team, and on that broader like company or community. And I think a big part of that is being able to leverage some of that data, right? It's pretty powerful. And there's so many academic studies that talk about happiness and wellness. We see it from a retention and attraction perspective, and then from a development perspective, obviously. There's just so much rich data there that can quantify these things right now, which is really, really compelling.
Yeah, the retention study is an interesting one to me. So it's essentially you've demonstrated there's a clear link between an employee's participation in corporate purpose programs, so whether that's volunteerism or giving or both, and how long they stay at the company. And so if I'm on the website now reviewing this, so employees who have been there, 2.5 years or less have a 52% or there's a reduction of 52% in turnover compared to employees that don't participate in the program at all. That's wild.
Right. I know, right? Think of that like ROI like slide, right? Or formula that you're creating within a business. Like that sells itself. Like what other initiative at the cost or like the limited cost, frankly, of running a volunteer program, can you have that type of return, right? And so I think this is one of the more interesting conversations myself and many others at Benevity are getting the chance to have with our clients who are building the business case for not only keeping but expanding their volunteer, their acts of kindness programming within their businesses. It's like it's not just the social impact, it's the business impact. And like teams, executive team, look at what this can drive for our bottom line. And like a 52% reduction in turnover, like that's significant. Like that impacts the bottom line. And that's music to a CFO's ears, right? That's music to a COO's ears. So how do we ensure that we're helping our clients build that business case, in addition to like the profound social impact that high quality volunteering can have?
I like that you said high quality. So, what do you define as high quality volunteering then?
I don't know if I want. Look, I think high quality means a lot of different things for a lot of different people. I think, like you, I had the chance before joining Benevity to run a corporate engagement program for a really big global business with like nearly 90,000 employees and I think 35 or 36 countries. And so when I say quality volunteering program, I mean it from two lenses. One is it needs to meet that individual employee where they're at. And as you know, all people are different. All people have different needs and different interests and different time commitments that they have to work within. And so you need a diversity of volunteering opportunities that meet them where they're at and meet them on their own journey to like community giving and community investment. So when I think of quality, I think of like diversification of different types of opportunities to meet employees where they're at. The second part of quality is like probably a little bit harder to measure, but I think is the most important thing is to be very honest, and maybe far too honest, I am very worried about like the return to painting a fence
Yeah.
culture of corporate volunteering. And so when this work is done, and when these companies are building their volunteer programs, they need to work hand in hand with their nonprofit partners to ensure that those programs that are being developed are adding real value to those organizations and the beneficiaries that they see they serve and the core needs of those organizations. Like we can't go back to the days of just painting and repainting a fence. And I'm worried about that. And so when I say quality is, I think it's got to be diversified and meet employees where it's at. But I think almost more importantly, it needs to meet where nonprofits are at and make sure that it's done in collaboration and close alignment with the needs of the nonprofit organization. Because if we're not doing that, then like this is all for naught.
Yeah. I just wanted to take a very quick pause from the episode to let you know about my book. So, for many of you listening, you may not know that I have written a book all about stress management. It is called Stress Less in 90 Days: Your Guide to Beat Burnout, Build Resilience, and Actually Enjoy Your Daily Life. So, if you've been listening to and enjoying this podcast, you know that I do not believe that bubble baths or scented candles or any of those things are going to be your quick fix to stress management. It's just not going to be the case. And when we talk about managing your stress in the workplace, which I know so many of us feel, and you probably wouldn't be listening to the podcast right now if it's not something that you've experienced, these things take time. And I think what can be so helpful for us in conjunction with, good therapy and good policies in the workplace and all of those things is walking through the foundations of stress management in bite-sized, achievable steps. And that is exactly why I wrote and designed this 12-week program. So it is going to make the process of, achieving a less stressed life so much more manageable. Throughout the program, you're going to be able to build your resilience, to bring in a bit more joy into your everyday life, understand your values better, what makes you tick, how to create strong boundaries, and so much more. The number one feedback I receive from people who have read the book and gone through the accompanying workbook that you get when you buy the book is how simple it is. We take out any of the guesswork, and it can all be done in as little as an hour and a half a week. And it gives you some good things to reflect on, stuff that you probably haven't considered before or maybe realized the connection to. And for me, one of the reasons the book was also so important to write was I love coaching. I love one-on-one coaching. I love group coaching. But I also recognize that financially, for a lot of people, myself included at times, that coaching is a bit of a financial barrier. So this book was my way to take a coaching program that we might do in person or over video and really condense it into what you could take away in a book format, what you could do in your spare time before, those 10 minutes before bed, chugging through a little bit of this every week. I understand the time crunch that so many of us are under, and adding more to your plate is not necessarily going to help you with the stress management, right? So I wanted to make this attainable, achievable, accessible, whatever all those A words are. I wanted it to be something that you could take away and really thrive from. So if that is of interest to you, you can find my book, Stress Less in 90 Days, anywhere on Amazon. I actually recorded the audiobook as well. So I know you're an audio listener, my podcast folks here. So if that's of interest to you, please check it out on Audible, and you can find the ebook version wherever ebooks are sold. So I'll include a link in it in today's show notes. Let's get back to the episode.
The challenge I see with that, and like I fully agree with you. However, the painting the fence opportunities are often where like you will see higher participation. So my worry is that higher quality will lead to slightly lower participation, which organizations don't want to see because more they often feel like more is more. What's your thoughts?
I mean the wonderful and dreaded participation
Yeah.
word, right? Is again, I think that that's where this idea of diversification comes into play because what we're seeing more and more in our platform are new and different types of volunteering opportunities emerging, and some of those are quote unquote like untraditional. At Benevity, we think of those as those acts of kindness or those acts of service. So maybe not directly tied to a nonprofit organization, right? Like you and your colleagues going up, going along the to a park near your office and picking up trash, right? A lot of these things are things that really came to light during the pandemic, and where it was like, okay, you could help your neighbor with groceries and carrying it up the stairs. You could be writing letters to senior citizen homes, like all of these very different and softer definitions of volunteering. And so I think if you look at a program holistically, beyond just like volunteer hours, you can still drive incredibly high participation because how someone participates in quote unquote community and gives back can be very different. It doesn't just need to be as binary as like making a donation or volunteering for an hour at a food bank. And I think that that's like a very old school and traditional way of thinking about these things. There's such a broad spectrum of giving back and engaging and making your community a better place. And that's what like the best and the strongest and the most compelling companies are doing right now. They're building those programs that are built to last because they're broad and they meet employees where they're at.
Yeah. In terms of the retention data, have you ever sliced the data based on like volunteer opportunity owners or creators?
That is a great question. So volunteer owners in terms
Like the
of like,
people
is
who,
it a,
like not the person running the
yeah.
CSR program, but like I am part of an employee resource group. I'm running a volunteer opportunity. Am I more likely as a result to stay longer than, you know, is my retention higher than the volunteer who shows up to the opportunity?
Yeah, that's a great question, Victoria. I think so. Our analytics and insight team cranks out these numbers and dissects it from a number of different lens. And it's some of the ones that are more traditional, right? We have regional views, we have type of business and industry, we have tenure within an organization, obviously, we have job title. I don't know if we've done it, to be honest, by what you just suggested, but it's a fascinating lens for our like a follow-up State of Corporate Volunteering Part Two report is to do that sort of an analysis. I don't know if we actually have.
Well, because I also think of it from a professional development standpoint. Like, I think people, it depends on the organization you work for and how open they are to social purpose in general. But, like, it's not a small thing to lead and coordinate and organize a volunteer opportunity. It's no different, really, than project management. And there's communication skills and leadership skills and all of those at play. So I can see that being, you know, something you could push as a professional development opportunity that then also. I'm making an assumption here that the turnover, reduction in turnover would be a higher percentage than your average volunteer.
Yeah, no, I entirely agree with the premise and that implicit side of things. So I guess now it's on us to validate that
Well,
explicitly.
you're going to report back to me because I want to know.
Yep,
Okay.
100%. We can do that. Our analytics team is listening to this podcast right
I
now,
love it.
saying, "Okay, great. This is the next thing we have to do."
So before we move on from turnover, it's not only going to be social purpose folks who are listening to this podcast. It's probably a lot of leaders, frontline managers, that kind of thing. I would take this as a message that even if your organization doesn't have specific volunteer opportunities that meet your need or a intentional program, that doesn't stop you as a leader from organizing volunteer opportunities and hopefully seeing the same kind of results and a reduction in turnover.
Yeah, exactly. I think you said it probably better than I could. I don't know what really to add there. It's these things work better, and we have all the data to back it up, is when they're done authentically, collaboratively amongst team members, and it's done purposefully. And so whether you work at a massive organization that has tons of resources to throw at this and teams, and you've got a platform like Benevity, or if you're a smaller organization who is doing this themselves, or a leader who wants to establish it, is like engage your colleagues, have conversations about it, find ways for them to participate in ways that allow them to support the causes that matter to them. And then you'll reap the benefits of that, right? A more unified, a more productive, and I think to your point about retention, a more loyal workforce.
Well, I'm a big fan of the study, so I'm just so glad that it exists and validates what we all as social impact leaders were feeling for such a long time.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So,
The team will be
oh,
thrilled.
I'm glad. Well, we'll shift into there's some interesting data in the 2023 State of Corporate Purpose report. And what always stood out to me is there's this push-pull between for participation in employee volunteer programs, a push-pull between CSR leaders believing that they should be more courageous and that their company should take a stand, even if it, you know, on these big social impact issues that might alienate people. And then the same people also who were surveyed also feel that companies should be more cautious about which issues are supported. And it's like 88% say be courageous and 71% say be cautious, and they're the same people. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, I think so. Our State of Corporate Purpose annual report that we do, and to your point up the top, is like we have this amazing aggregate set of data of working with nearly 1,000 clients and having 20 million users on the platform and 2 million causes that are engaged across our product lines. And so we have this really, really rich and dynamic set of data. And so every year in our State of Corporate Purpose, we pull out some of those key trends and insights and build a narrative around them. And I think in the 2023 State of Corporate Purpose, this notion that you're pulling out around purpose and polarization going head to head is the one, to be very honest, that resonated the most with me. And I think it resonates the most with me is because, like, Ryan as an individual and Victoria as an individual, as a consumer, like, you see this playing out every single day at the grocery store, when you turn on the news, when you open up your various social media threads, right? Like, we want leaders, we want companies, we want our friends and family to be purposeful, to make a stand and take a stand on those really important issues. But the problem with that is, in this increasingly polarized world, is there are more and more people at various ends of that spectrum of some of those issues. And so as a company, how the heck do you navigate that, yeah, right? As a brand with your consumers, but also as an employer, with employees that are going to have such a varying set of viewpoints, right? And so how can you be courageous? How can you be thoughtful? How do you prepare for potential negative backlash? And how do you just really be purposeful? I think it's a responsibility for companies to embrace this, but it is not easy, right? It is not easy to take a stand on these things. And so I think what you're going to see, and we're starting to see, is some of those companies being a little bit quieter, maybe, about the statements and the commitments they make. Not stopping the commitment, not stopping the funding to X issue or X organization, but maybe just talking about it a little bit less. And so maybe that's the happy medium that gets struck between this notion of purpose and polarization. It's hard. We all know the examples that have been in the news over the last year, right? Whether it be about equity and rights and human rights, whether it be around, like, the buzzword of ESG, like, and so many more examples, what's happening right now in the Middle East. Like, there are so many examples of how companies are trying to navigate this, and some are doing a really great job, some are struggling, and there's a lot in between. But I don't see that going away, Victoria, yeah, in the next year, right? Like, I only see it, unfortunately, probably getting worse and more challenging.
Which is, I think, interesting, because I'm maybe this is like past workplace trauma coming into play here, but, you know, so many people think that a corporate social purpose program or whatnot, that the people, like, that it's the fluffy department, or I definitely had that term flown at me once, it's the fluffy work. And as you've just described, we're talking about brand recognition and reputation and all of these incredibly complex things at play with anything that you're doing when it comes to any donation that you make as an organization, stand that you take, volunteer opportunities and organizations that you engage with. Like, this is not for the faint of heart. It's incredibly complex work.
Yeah, 100%, Victoria. And then, like, I look, that fluff word, like, it makes I, like, tensed my shoulders as you said it, because I heard it for a number, yeah, of years, right? And there was probably, like, a younger and immature version of myself who probably thought the same for a hot minute as well. But, like, these things aren't going away, right? Like, ESG and the requirements around it from a compliance, a reporting, like, those things aren't going away. They're evolving. And I think, frankly, they're evolving in a really wonderful way to be far more focused on positive impact and, like, the direction of a business, but they're not going away. And employees care about this, customers care about it, shareholders care about it. They maybe just aren't the loudest voice in the room, right? So I think we need to remember that as we navigate these sort of turbulent times, is that just because you hear a loud voice, it doesn't mean it's the not the right voice. It's not the prevalent voice, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of our data and research supports that. You laid out a couple of great stats earlier, but, like, one of the ones that stood out to me was, as part of our research and surveying, it was that 93% of CSR leaders believe that companies should act as a unifying force, right? Like, there is that aspiration to inspire more than in previous years. And, like, folks are ready. Like, they want that mandate. So let's enable and empower those leaders to bring their workforces together in a positive direction, which for me is like incredibly compelling and exciting.
I'm so curious. I mean, this is another data curiosity. I'm sure doesn't exist for this phone call right now, but I'm so curious if that 93%, how that's broken out regionally based on countries that have stronger, what's the word I'm looking for? Social structures and systems versus, sort of maybe the U.S. or other organized other regions. But that's my curiosity for a later day. So I want to shift a little bit. Like, we've been talking about corporate purpose, and I want to shift a little bit to like individual purpose, because I to me that retention study and the happiness and the joy that people get from volunteering, talks a little bit more about that individual purpose. And what we know from stress management in the workplace is that when people feel like they have purpose, they are more likely to stay in a job, to feel happier, to feel more fulfilled. What do you think a program, any of participation in any of these programs gives you in terms of purpose that maybe your workplace isn't giving you right now?
I think there are, it's a tough question. I think there are like 100 studies and data points out there that in various iterations say that like employees want that personal sense of purpose, and see it connected to where they work, right? And that it ranks higher than a paycheck or ranks alongside a paycheck, and that they would want to work for a business that sought their input on these things, right? There are hundreds of powerful statistics and data points and quotes, right, who speak to this. I think at the end of the day, and maybe I'm just not that smart, but and so I like to simplify things, is we spend an inordinate amount of time at our places of employment, right? Whether you're sitting in front of your laptop on a Zoom call all day, whether you're on the front lines at a plant and everything in between, right? Like, you spend an inordinate amount of time at your place of work. And so, in doing so, folks want that to matter. You can't look around on what you're seeing every day in the news or when you pull open TikTok and all those other things and like pretend like it's not happening and then go off to your job for 4 hours, for 8 hours, for 12 hours and just live in this bubble, right? It just doesn't exist anymore. And I think generationally, it's just going to get more and more severe or pronounced. And so, like, this matters to employees. And so, the companies that are doing a really great job of that are finding ways to meet their employees on this journey of like having them discover their own purpose and feel connected to their purpose while showing up to work every single day. Does that answer your
I
question?
think so. And I'd like to maybe dive into, because to me, one of the key components of that purpose through a program like this is the open choice. Would you agree? The open choice of where
Yes.
people can donate and where they can volunteer.
Yeah, like we've seen an incredible amount of success, and frankly, it's been a huge part of why Benevity is the organization that it is, and this notion of democratization of giving, of volunteering. And I think it comes down to, once again, probably oversimplifying things, is employees are on their own journey of either already really, really caring about something, or kind of caring about something but wanting to learn more, or like looking for something to care about. And when they have choice, that enables them to go through self-discovery to varying degrees. If they aren't given choice, then they're probably less likely to engage. And so, like, that has worked incredibly well for our clients who have open programs. And leverage the platform. And so, like, open programs, like, to be far more tactical, means that, like, Ryan Adams is an employee of Benevity. I can give to the things and the organizations that I care about. Like, I care about animals. I love conservation. I don't want to be told by my employer, by Benevity, that I have to give to X food security organization. Like, I want to give my time, I want to give my skills, I want to give my dollars to animal rights organizations and land conservation organizations. And then when I see Benevity support that to and celebrate that and empower that with matching and other rewards, like, that makes me incredibly proud to work at Benevity, right? And so as an example of one, but like we see that across our client base. And so enabling that choice, it just builds that trust and sense of community and connection between an employee and their colleagues and the company.
And for those who are listening that maybe don't understand what, and they might be thinking, well, choice is everywhere, isn't it? And it's just not the case, right? There's a lot of organizations that say these are our corporate pillars of we care about security or mental health or whatever it is. And so those are the only causes we'll kind of allow matching donations to. And so that's really where, you know, why that choice is important to give everyone that opportunity to participate in a way that's meaningful to them.
Yeah, exactly, Victoria.
In terms of volunteerism and purpose, is there anything in the data that kind of points to like different types of volunteerism being, I don't want to use the word better, but like more, like you're going to get more participation from it, or like skills-based volunteerism leading to any other interesting data points?
Yeah, I mean, the word skills-based is like the sexy volunteer word of the day and has been for the last couple of years. Is like skills-based is really sexy right now, right? Everyone is thinking about, okay, I don't want to just volunteer my time. I want to volunteer my skills, right? The things that I'm learning and honing in every single day at work, I want to take them and support big global organization or small grassroots organization with those skills and help that organization be great, more successful by leveraging that, right? And so skills-based volunteering is very sexy. It continues to be on the rise across like our entire client community and just across companies everywhere. But it's not the only ones that are really driving greater purpose and more meaningful connection, especially coming out of the pandemic. And so many companies are navigating this like remote, in person, hybrid. What does this new world look like? Context, look, location-based volunteering is seeing a massive jump. And I think it's seen a massive jump for a couple of obvious reasons, right? Is one, employees themselves are seeking connection, right? Like there are so many employees at Benevity that I've still only met on a Zoom screen, right? And so the chance to be in person and build real connection with your colleagues that you spend a lot of time with every day, that is super powerful and has a lot of meaning. And it translates into deeper trust and deeper bonds that hopefully make you and your colleague better at your jobs, right? The second side of it, beyond just at an employee level, is that companies are seeing these location-based volunteering moments and events as great ways to foster that connection, right? And to not like by no means force it, but like sort of curate and convene colleagues from various different types of the organization to come together in a way that was like kind of lost in the last couple of years, right? You think of how many people have joined organizations during the pandemic or just after, who don't under or don't know or understand or appreciate what the organization was pre-pandemic. And so for a company to curate that, to bring together through company-created volunteer opportunities and events, like that has had a massive impact, not just on participation, and we can talk about that, right? Because it drives participation like sevenfold, but really just in like meaningful connection as well. And so that's been really powerful, Victoria.
I think there's also something about that, like seeing is believing tactile thing of like whether
Yeah.
it's like I've been picking up garbage, I can see the result before and after, I've moved my body, like it's a hands-on, you know, get out of the chaos in your head and get into your body kind of thing. Like there's so many different elements I think that go to play as connection being a core one, but that there's, you know, all those other side benefits of those location-based opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. And the one other thing, and we started to talk about this earlier, and I do just want to double back on it because we've seen just such a massive spike in this over the last little bit, is that this like broader definition of volunteering. And like conceptually, that is like slightly profound, right? If you just take a step back and how we as a society and we as a company and we as an industry like define what is volunteering and what isn't. The fact that that is like evolving kind of in real time right now, like I don't know what the exact time frame is, but has volunteering, like the definition of volunteering, changed in the last 50 years before the 3 years ago? I don't really think it has too much. And so to be in that inflection point where it is evolving to these acts of kindness and acts of service, those small acts of goodwill, as almost as like an entry point into social action and giving back to your community. I think it's a really big shift. And we've seen that in terms of like the participation and the numbers of hours and things like that. But I think we're just getting started there. I think it's only going to grow.
Here's another study for you guys to do. I would
Yeah.
love to know the like link down the line of the companies who include acts of kindness as opportunities, and the relationship between psychological safety within an organization. Because to me, if you're allowing acts of kindness not just as group opportunities, but as individual volunteering, that shows that you trust that the employee is doing what they're saying they're doing. I think so often that's why it's not included in programs, because it's like, oh, they said they picked up garbage for an hour by themselves. Who's going to prove it? Versus a group opportunity, right? And, but if you trust your employees to do that, you're likely, I'm again making a leap and a guess of my own assumption, that you're more likely to have a more psychologically safe organization, which also ties to retention and well-being.
Yeah, Victoria, I love that point. That is like, I couldn't have said even a version of that half as well. That's such a great, that's
I told you I
such a
geek
great
out on the
point.
data
Yeah.
here. Okay. Do as we were the economy is what the economy is, right? Like it just seems to be getting worse and worse. But when the economy is in a rut, things always get tight, either in budget or staffing or both. And there is often, unfortunately, this sort of reaction from businesses to want to pull back on corporate purpose programs. And I understand, right? If you lay off a ton of employees, you know, you're sensitive to then what the message says about let's do a matching campaign for donations, or let's go out and volunteer with our t-shirts on and our pride. Why do you think maybe it's a mistake to pull back on those programs at that time?
Yeah, this is this is a tough one. This is a tough one, to be honest. I think the simple answer is yeah, like I at my core believe in the power of these like CSR programs, these employee engagement programs, and just the long-term benefits they have to a business, to an employee, to the community, right? So like it's true to who I am. So like for me, it's a no-brainer. Like you find ways to make this work. And it doesn't mean that that doesn't evolve and you don't have to trim down budgets and be more creative and more flexible with it. But like at my core, I'm like, this is a no-brainer. Like you have to do this. The more nuanced answer to that is CSR programs, when done well, and there's tons of playbooks and research and guidelines are in there, are like really simple, really inclusive, and entirely voluntary, right? Like you empower, you as in the business, empower your employees to participate in ways that allow them to find meaning, right? And you reap the benefits of that in a more unified, productive, and loyal workforce, as we talked about earlier. But like, that doesn't have to be the same as it was 2 years ago when times were really good and there was a ton of money flowing around, right? Like it's the idea of finding those opportunities for your employees and evolving them, right? Constantly learning and shifting them so that you can do it, right? We've talked about the business case in terms of retention, so we don't need to over-index on that. But like when you take these things away, it eats into the enthusiasm, the connection, the learning, and the growth that employees have in their job, right? Employees love these types of programs. It's why participation is so high in them. And so I think it's on companies to find unique and thoughtful and creative ways within the confines of their own realities to make this work, to find ways to continue to invest. Because I think the long-term benefits, the payout is there. You just might not see it, like year over year during challenging times.
Well, and if you think of the studies of people who are experiencing depression or anxiety, which are all things people can experience during economically hard times or layoffs, volunteerism helps them through that, right? It gives them a sense of purpose outside of themselves, whether or not there's a big budget attached to those events.
It exactly, right? And again, this is where I think this broader notion of acts of service and kindness come back into play, because these things don't have to be expensive. They don't need to have significant monetary investment, right? Like some forms of volunteerism, like have require no like monetary model with a nonprofit. There's like conflicting arguments on that, which is like a whole different conversation. And a worthwhile conversation. But like a lot of them don't require a financial contribution or a monetary contribution. There are so many different acts of service in your community that don't require a monetary contribution. So again, as program leaders, as business leaders, how do you be creative in finding ways to engage your people, right? It's no different than other ways of engaging your people during uncertain economic times, right? Like the big staff party may look or feel a lot different, but you don't just stop doing everything during uncertain economic times. You just evolve and you try different things and you're thoughtful of the environment around you.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. So Benevity works with a lot of, very large organizations, those Fortune 500 companies. What's your advice for maybe those smaller organizations that are trying to frame out their first maybe official employee giving and volunteer program? Maybe they don't have the budget for a software that can support, with all the administrative things on the back end, but like, are there any key pillars, or like, if you're going to start from scratch, absolutely include these pieces in your program in order to see it successful.
Yeah, 100%, Victoria, and I would love your take on this as well, right? But like what you know and what I know, and probably many people listening in, is like these types of workplace giving or corporate purpose programs work at any size of business, right? It does not matter if you are a Fortune 500 or you are like a small startup, like they work, right? Engaging your employees in small acts around community and purpose, that has an impact, right? And so you can do that. I think the biggest thing to start is really honing in on who you are as a business and what that company mission looks like related to your purpose and your CSR program, right? And then, of course, the secondary thing is setting some goals, right? You build out a mission, you build out goals, you build out a narrative, and you engage your employees in that process. I'm just going to like underline that point. You engage your employees in that process and you're off to a great start, right? Like if you get there, a lot of the other things take care of themselves, whether it be workplace giving, whether it be volunteering, whatever it may be, learning about different issues in your community. Like lunch and learns are wonderful things when you're setting up these types of programs because it allows your employees to learn and listen and present on different aspects of this. So it starts from the bottom up and from the top down, right? It all works in concert together. And so I think those are the big things, right? Engage your employees from the outset, align on your company mission, set some goals, start learning, make sure it's well balanced between that bottom up grassroots support, approach, but then also that top down, right? You need executive buy-in and sponsorship and support. And if you do those things, then you can start being a little bit creative and thinking about what other things can you do. If you want to do a workplace giving, can you do something like peer matching? Can you unlock small budgets to test and learn fun gamified ways to bring your employees together? But those things are almost secondary, right? Like take care of the top part, and then the ideas will, I think, flow from there.
No, I agree with what you're saying. And I would also say don't underestimate the follow-up from volunteer from campaigns or
Yeah.
volunteer opportunities as you're building these programs, both as a way to like tie it back to that impact and say, like the reporting back of like, this is what we did, this is the difference that we made, and then getting that feedback as well of like, how could we improve? What would you like to see done differently? It's, I mean, especially if you're starting out in a program like this, the organizers will be doing this off the side of their desk, most likely. And so it's easy for those pieces to fall because you're focused on the event or the campaign itself. But I wouldn't underestimate that. And I would also say, like, build templates out as you go. Because
Yeah.
sometimes, like, the communication or the like, all of that can be templated. Like, it doesn't have to be cookie cutter, so to speak, but like, you will save yourself time in the long run if like you start to build these as you go, to for future you, but also for other people who want to organize opportunities within your organization. Just make it simple, right?
Yeah, it's such a great point, Victoria. And then the other obvious thing, and we sometimes I think we forget the step when we're like engineering our own programs is like those employees like don't exist in a bubble, right? They have personal lives, like they engage in their community, they volunteer, they give back, they've worked at other organizations who have these things. And so you're like sitting on such a wealth of knowledge. And so tap into that, right? Like as folks who are CSR professionals, like we don't have to do it all ourselves. Our employees are like our greatest assets there, right? And so let's leverage those.
Power of people. I love it.
Yeah.
Is there anything like trend-wise that really excites you about the next few years?
Can I, in the spirit of the podcast, can I talk about what's stressing me out instead of
Oh,
excites
sure.
me?
Go for it.
So I and the one thing that is like consistently keeping me up right now is what I keep on referring to as like this parallel universe that is emerging. And what that looks like to me is corporate volunteering numbers have like never been higher. At Benevity last year in our platform, we saw, I think it was like a 60% increase year over year in the number of hours, a 90% plus increase of the number of individual volunteers year over year. Those are objectively like wonderful things, right? You look at that and you hear, man, Benevity had over 14 million hours of volunteering on the platform last year. Think about all of the service to community and nonprofits that that is happening. And to a large point, that's true. The parallel universe in my mind is that at the same time, every study you see out of especially North America, from the US or from Canada, is that nonprofits have a desperate shortage for recurring volunteers, right, that are core to their ability to keep the lights on and run their organizations. And the disconnect between those two things stresses me out to no end. And so I feel as like Benevity as a leader in the space and all of our amazing clients and the various folks who are doing really great work here, like we need to hold ourselves accountable to ensure that the disconnect or those parallel universe does not get bigger, right? It needs to shrink. And so that's the thing that's stressing me out. But the opportunity of that, which is really exciting, to go back to your question, is if we can figure it out and if we can bridge those two universes, oh, the like potential for impact is just incredible. And that's the thing that like excites me every single day when I'm thinking about volunteering and corporate volunteer programming is if we can harness all of that goodness to address the very neat, real, and like urgent needs of that nonprofit community, like the amount of goodness that we can do would be incredible.
And I think that's where ERGs can come in, or that's where I've seen it be successful in the past, because those recurring opportunities are hard to manage for large groups of people, I think. But if an ERG
Yes.
champions an organization and we're going to volunteer repeatedly with this one organization this year, or maybe future years as well, and it's maybe 5 people or 10 people, but they're showing up repeatedly because they've not adopted, sounds a bit paternalistic, but you know what I mean here. But like, they've, you
Total.
know,
No,
that's the
yeah.
one that they're championing. I think that's where you can see, could start to see some of the trajectory in a better direction.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that the role that ERG and ERG leaders can play in that is so significant. And to your point about the recurring nature of that, the other thing I would love to see is more like cross-business collaboration,
Yeah.
right? I would love to see more of those big corporates who operate in the same region, who have their headquarters or regional offices in the same region, like find ways to collaborate and build off of each other's strengths. Instead of, not that they compete, because compete isn't the right word, but sort of operate distinctly, maybe find ways to collaborate more. And we're starting to see some of that, right? Dialogues are happening. There's some really cool examples of initiatives centered around big systemic global issues, but I love to see so much more of that. And I think they can play a big role there too.
Well, I love that. Thank you so much. Is there any anything going on at Benevity that you want to give a shout out to before we wrap up here?
I mean, the team at Benevity is just phenomenal, as you know, and they are working incredibly hard. We have our big annual Benevity Live event in about a month where we bring, I think, close to 500 of our clients together to celebrate all of the amazing goodness that they're helping to create and share best practices and learnings. So we're all working pretty hard getting ready for that big show. And so that's top of mind for me, I think. And I think that's where I'm going to go after this podcast is
Yeah.
back to work on preparing for
And
that.
I would also give a shout out to any of the webinars and resources that you guys put together. I think are a very high quality, so helpful for anyone who's curious in the space.
Oh, that's so kind.
Well, thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
No problem, Victoria. That was great. Thanks for having me.
So big, big thank you to Ryan for joining me on the podcast. Like I said, I truly had a phenomenal time talking about that. It's a conversation that I don't think I can get enough of. So I can't wait to hear that data come out in the next year's State of Corporate Volunteerism. Maybe we'll see some interesting and new data points that we discussed today. So for those of you who are listening, please don't hesitate to reach out if you have any questions. You can find myself and Ryan over on LinkedIn. Check out the links in today's show notes for any of the resources that we described, and have a fantastic week. Next week, we're going to be joined on the podcast next week by Darcy Smith, and we're going to be talking all about the stress in job hunting. It is an intensely stressful experience if you've ever been through it. We've all been through it. But Darcy, as a career coach, gives us a great perspective on what the job market looks like right now and some strategies to better manage your stress in your search, or that of the friends and family that you know who are going through it. So until next week, take good care of yourself.